I'm good. Thomas, you good?
Yes, I'm perfect.
All right. Okay.
Welcome, everybody, to episode 29 of That Round It podcast. Today is a very special day because it's Tops' birthday. Yay!
Yay!
How old are you today, Tops?
I'm 28. I'm doing really, really good. I'm cheesing today.
Anyone who's not watching, they should note that Mike has a lovely background, so you can turn over to Spotify and check in the background of his picture today.
I got a nice Tops.
That's an imposter Tops in the podcast.
Imposter Tops.
But yes, it is Thomas's birthday. So today and this episode is that little bit more special. If you're listening to this now, his birthday's already gone. So don't even think about telling him happy birthday. You already missed it, which is disgraceful that you haven't.
Wait a year.
Happy birthday soon.
Set a reminder for that.
Yeah, set a reminder on your phone right now. Okay.
Yeah. You missed it.
I'm kind of disappointed, but yeah.
Yeah. But
I'm so happy we had the podcast, or else I would have forgot. So, you know, it's great. Scott, what do we got today?
Yes, today's episode. So again, last few weeks, we've been having so many events to cover because, of course, we've had the championship, the European championship, other events that have like led on, such as the majors. But today we're going to go back to sort of, you know, old style / normal style, That Round It podcast. I'm going to talk about some big topics that we haven't really had too much time to discuss this year, but are all very much important in the bigger scheme of things, the growth of RoundNet and, yeah, so all the worldwide perspectives. So amongst those topics that we're going to discuss today, it's alongside sponsorship in regards to manufacturers being sponsors. They've done this now in 2023 with both Spikeball and Premier Spike sponsoring athletes. What will happen in 2024? Will that continue to happen? Also talking in regards to manufacturers running tour series and how we think that should or could potentially look in the future. Also going to be discussing the Worlds format. It's going to be going to be different to the Worlds format we had in 2022. And that was released a couple of weeks ago, so we want to discuss that a little bit, as well as sort of RoundNet accounts, RoundNet growth, team accounts, and things sort of we think we need to do to take the sport to the next level. How does that sound to you guys?
Sounds great to me, amazing. Thomas.
Okay, let's start with the first topic. Let's start with the Worlds, because that's going to affect pretty much everyone who's playing RoundNet right now at a high level and are hoping to compete at Worlds. So the first thing to note about Worlds 2024, other than it is in London, England, so it's the best location it could ever be in, there is going to be a mix-up with the format. So last year in 2022, we had an individual squads tournament where teams will compete individually and then go through the bracket, and that's where we had Buddy and Clark, of course, become the first world champions in the individual competition. And then that then set the seeding, or helped set the seeding, for the next day's competition, or not the next day's because the individual was over 2 days, but then it would set the competition up for the group play, but the actual squad play, where countries would then meet against each other starting.
And there wasn't squad play bracket. It was just how well did your individual teams do that set your bracket seed.
Yeah, that helped then contribute to your bracket seed. So if you was the 8 seed, you played the 9 seed. If you was the 1 seed, you'd play the 16 seed, depending on how big the format was. So that's what we had for 2022. Now, things to note for 2024 is that next year we're going to have 5 men's squad and 5 women's squads. So that's now an increase from 2022.
Teams, I'll say teams as the
teams, yes, as teams. The correct definition, yeah. Indeed.
Yeah.
So instead of having 3 teams, women's teams, and 5 men's teams in 2022, they're now going to be equal, meaning 5 and 5, which first off the bat, I would say is amazing, like in regards to the bigger picture and having and encouraging and incentivizing nations to grow the women's scene. We already know the ratio of men to women is horrific in the sport. And that's at least one great step to be made and to be taken for, you know, give some NGB some incentives to get the women's scene. The only thing I would note is that there were some countries that didn't turn up with a women's squad at all, or turn up with not full women's squads. And that was only 3, you know, that was only 3. So now that it's 5, will we see all the countries be able to compete and get 5 women's teams? And what will be potentially the standard of those women's teams if they couldn't get 3 1 year ago, and now they're expected to be 5 and you know, hopefully be at a high level, so it's still, you know, a very competitive and a good event. But how much are we sacrificing maybe quality in regards to quality event and athletes versus the growth and the more, I would say
it's more like we talked about with like college roundnet, where it's like, yeah, it may be less quality, women's teams compared to maybe what would be ideally a world championship. However, like, it is a push that encourages and incentivizes NGBs to improve their women's recruitment and play. So I think, like, you know, that's worth whatever, right? Like you're saying, like, there may be lower levels or some teams might be having to work hard to get those 5 women's teams, but like, that's worth it. I think that's part of the process for getting more women into the sport.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I talked with a few women's teams and they are a bit scared that the overall quality is then not that great because there's a big gap between like the top 3 probably teams, and then you still have to get 2 more teams. So I'm kind of I see what they mean, because in women's roundup it's already that you have kind of a gap really quickly. And now when you need to force 4 or 5 teams overall in the women's segment, it's going to be dropping massive probably in quality, and hopefully that doesn't, you know, they don't suffer from that. But I see why they choose to have 5 on 5. I mean, obviously when we get 2 more teams to join, it will be massive. But quality-wise, I think it's going to be a big difference between the games.
And yeah, and I don't think most countries, again, because most countries in early stages, we haven't had, you know, years and years to build foundations, to build those recruitments. But I still think in my opinion, it's the right move, because if they don't have the incentive, almost every nation has 3 teams, has 3 women's teams. So therefore, if you don't have that incentive to get new women into the sport by having that additional 2 extra spots, every country would be like, okay, let's just improve our 3 that went to Worlds last year. Let's just improve the 3 that's already there. And that doesn't really do anything for the bigger picture, and also doesn't do anything for fixing the ratio of being so drastically outweighed with men to women. So I do think it's a good move, even if we do see, you know, slight drop in quality, because maybe some women who may be starting, you know, in a day or 2 weeks or a month, they have a lot less time to prepare for the world championship and compete. But I think in the long run, it's the best move for sure, because we're going to look back on this maybe 6 years, 8 years, and be like, well, duh, that had to happen. If it didn't happen, we just continue seeing the same 3 top women's teams again and again, and there will be no incentive to grow and get more women in the scene, which, again, we've seen it being a problem.
Is there going to be mix at Worlds?
Yes. So, but they're going to change it a little bit. This is also interesting, and I wonder what you guys think about this topic. So instead of having, as they did last year, they had the mixed on the first day, and then they had the individual team competitions, and then the squad competition. Well, this year they're going to have the team competitions, or you could say individual competition, and that being alongside mixed. So each country is allowed 2 men's teams, 2 women's teams, and 2 mixed teams to compete for the individual tournament that takes place before the squad tournament. And if you play now in your men's teams, you can't play in the mixed team. If you play in your women's team, you can't play in your mixed team. So it's going to be quick math, 4 men athlete, 4 men and 4 women who will compete for that nation, which again, you know, 8 out of 20 that will be in the squad in total can compete. I'm not sure how I feel about this, because, you know, again, we haven't got too much depth in, you know, some countries haven't got too much depth. And now, what do you prefer to prioritize as a nation? Do you go, okay, we're going to have our top 4 players playing mixed, and then just have our squads and fill out our men's and women's teams? Or do you, you know, focus on your best 2 men's team, best 2 women's teams, and not prioritize the mix? I think mix is such an amazing thing for roundnet. It's a little bit of a shame that we're potentially taking away the top quality of each nation to play and represent mix. And nations will have to choose what they want to prioritize. I'm personally not a massive fan. I think it would be nice to have, again, the mixed and then the individual squad competition. But of course, I'm not, you know, choosing the system. But I think from my perspective, it would be nice to have the mixed, because it was such a big part of our sport and around its growth, in my opinion.
Do you know what was the reason behind this decision? Like, is there some additional information about why they choose this system? Because for me, also for streaming, of course, it would be very interesting because Mixed is also a big competition, and it's easier to have one kind of division per day. Do you know?
No, unfortunately not. They did say they used the input of NGBs and combined feedback that they got from Worlds 2022 and their own experiences and takeaways to decide the structure for 2024. That's their words on the IRF website, where people can check this information too if they want to check it out themselves. And they do also mention that this is pretty rough and they still got a lot of details to be locked in. The things that they can say is it was going to happen is the things that we've mentioned, such as two teams of men's, women's mixed, and then the five of men's and women's squad competition. So
I think about it is like last time the individual like worked into the squad format and affected seeding. This time around, I think it is just a separate event. Like there is their own pool play for squads,
which is awesome,
which is great. So I don't have a big problem. I think like you may not be getting the best mixed play, but I don't think you're getting poor mixed play, right? Like with only eight competing out of the 20, right? Like you are getting most of the country's top players, and they can decide, right? Do they want to go for the mixed win? Do they want to go center? So I understand, Scott. I think it's still like high level where it is, and it's kind of deciding in between what you want. I think the biggest thing is like I'm glad the individual competition is still here, not just like
I agree
getting rid of it because like college, right? So college round it had individual, and then individual was like used for seeding for the squad the next day, and then like that's gone and it's like only squad play, and so like I don't think that's inherently bad, but it's nice to have still the individual competition in there as well. So I'm glad that both are still there.
I think the only thing to add, unless any you guys have anything else to add after, is that this format definitely favors the nations with depth, without a doubt. Those who have done a lot of like set foundations the last few years have a huge base of players and again have a lot of depth, because obviously the more depth you have, the more quality you have. Now if you're saying, oh, we have to have five women's teams, five men's teams, it's not a problem. They're not going out and having to recruit loads and loads of women. They've already got loads of women in the sport. It's just picking the best 10 to represent their five squads. And the same for the men's, women's, and mixed on the individual tournaments. And I think long run, that is the best situation. And hopefully, even though biased, he would say, oh, but you want more nations to have a chance. So let their best individuals compete and play against the other teams or the other countries' best teams. It's also the fact that if they are prioritizing the depth, hopefully a lot of NGBs will go and take away from this that, we really need to focus on our depth. It's not just, can we get them and play for us? And now we're the best squad here and now. It's no, let's try and set a foundation so we continually have this depth and are growing, because that's also that's a great incentive that the IRF have done so that people continue to grow the sport and not just think short term.
I'll say a great side effect of this. Oh, go, Thomas.
I just wanted to say, for me, I'm a bit scared that a few nations, or actually a lot of nations, won't be able to compete if they don't have the five teams and then separate mixed teams.
It's minimum. You need minimum three for your squad of five men's, five women's. Minimum three, right? Okay. So I think that's right. So
I know from last time, a lot of, like, even at the Euros, teams were like big communities like Jake Ronald or something were struggling to get enough women's teams also in. So
if you never incentivize them to grow the women's scene, when will they ever?
Yeah, that's awesome.
You sometimes have to miss out on a big tournament. Again, I think long term, it's the best solution. Even if one or two suffer a tiny bit in the short run, if you just continually say, nope, you don't have to get women's in, you don't have to grow the women's scene, we just do five men's teams, three women's teams. Oh, you can only compete with five men's teams, don't worry about the women's team. Like, then there's never ever going to be an incentive to grow the women's scene. Therefore, there's no sustainability in that, in the country's depth or the country's growth. It's just going to be as soon as that pool of players get too old, they're done, It's a give and take. I think it's the
decision. The best side effect of this is, right, like, Scott, I think you missed it last year. But watching like the mixed, like when it was just mixed playing and everyone cheering them on was like great. And I think individual was hard because like most people were playing the whole time. So having like just eight of the 20 players competing in, is that right? Am I doing the math right? No,
yes, you're correct. Yeah, eight. Mm-hmm. No, yes, four women team.
Well,
or six.
12.
Six.
12. 12.
We both did the math wrong.
Quick, someone knows math.
Quick math.
Please help.
Six plus six.
Because it's six women, six men. That's so bad.
Yes.
12. Anyway, so a little over half of the, that was so bad. A little over half of the players will be competing in the individual, but that leaves, you know, 40% cheering on, which I think will be very fun for the pool play going in there, especially like cheering on your highest level teams. I think that'll make for a very fun kind of like opening event again. And it is shared, like, yes, it will be first is the idea. I think that'll be cool.
Yeah.
Watching 12 of the 20 compete.
Yep. Anyone, any last thoughts on Worlds format and Worlds in general before we move on to the next topic?
I hope they add next time more men's teams so Thomas can find a spot.
Wow.
I don't know if they expand it to like 20 per country, you could maybe get out there.
Then he might get in the trial squad.
Yeah.
And Mike Turner's
it would take 50 for me to get even close. So, you know,
that's being generous to you, Mike.
I'm talking I'm talking relative trash. So
remember it's my birthday. So if you want to have some hate mails for Mike, feel free to write him Lefty on 2 or like Mike White on Instagram.
Yeah, Lefty, I would on, 2. Yeah. Lefty on 2. You will never get a reply.
Lefty on 2. Lefty on 2 is getting real close to 2,000 followers and it hasn't been posted in a year. It's getting real close. 1980. Wait,
Let me unfollow it quickly.
Dude, we're 20 followers away from 2,000. If we get to 2,000 followers by the end of the week, Lefty on 2 is back.
Eyes, stop. All right. Let's move over into the next thing. So next big thing I want to discuss with you guys is the sponsorship we've seen this year in RoundNet, right? We've seen Spiteball not just have their elite program, which they did for athletes last year, who got in, I believe, the top four in both the men's and women's divisions. Could be wrong, could be top eight, but I believe it's top four that became Spiteball Elite. And then they also sponsored teams this year. And the backstory from what I know or heard, not 100% true, from what I think it is, Premier Spike were planning on sponsoring some athletes and some teams. Once they got the word, or once Spikeball knew or heard that Premier Spike was going to sponsor some teams, Spikeball also thought it was a good idea to sponsor and help some teams out. So Spikeball then paired and worked with a few teams. So then Spikeball sponsored some teams, Premier Spike sponsored some teams, and that's pretty much how the season went. It was a nice deal offering for some players to get a sponsorship deal to, you know, help aid their season. But where do we think this is going in 2024? Do we think it's the way to go for RoundNet manufacturers to be sponsoring athletes? Do we think that should be potentially their sole job while also making and creating equipment? Because I have quite a strong opinion on this, but I wonder what you guys think and feel before we discuss it in a little bit more detail.
For me, I think it's unavoidable for next season that we have for the manufacturers being sponsors, because it's still taking some time to get some other companies in, that say some, I don't know, brands that would manufacture like jerseys or something like that all around. I think at the moment, like, the two biggest are Premier Spike and Spikeball, and they will probably sponsor some teams. But I would not know which company would be able to have some sponsorship deals in. Otherwise, for like a few teams or something like that. I think Premier Spec had how many? 8 teams or something? Not
around
sure.
Then, and then some individuals and other in the community. Yeah.
Yeah, I think they're gonna be a big pool of that next season too, hopefully, for the players. And but I also hope that we get fresh companies or sponsors in, because we are in need of that for sure.
Mike,
he's muted.
I was muted. Yeah, I'm gonna brain dump real quick, and I think like I'm gonna pretend that I'm Spikeball or Premier Spike, but with the caveat that I don't know their business model, et cetera, et cetera. For me, it's about like return on investment, right? Like sponsorships is typically marketing in whatever way, right? Do you want to get direct sales via a link and discounts? Is it just about awareness? Is it about, you know, general awareness and market share? And so I think like that's where it is now, where I think Premier Spike was doing some stuff with like codes, right? So it is like awareness based, maybe get some market share and buy in from people that prefer Spikeball, but also like trying to do some sales. Where as far as I know, in the Spikeball sponsorships, it's more just like kind of awareness and giving to the community and showing that you're giving to the community. I think that's a big thing right there, is like showing that you're supporting the community. I think the larger thing is like, is that a return on investment coming back, right? Because like, if I was one of those companies, it's like, they can look at their sales, et cetera, but it's also hard to gauge, like, what are they going for? Premier Spike might be going for sales. And they're like, hey, through our sponsorships, we got an incremental, et cetera. Plus, we're doing this for Spikeball, not. So it's more of like, hey, how's the community feel about Spikeball versus Premier Spike? Like, it's kind of different on like what you're trying to get out of it. I think what I'm trying to say is like, I don't know what that would be. And as far as like, I don't really know what the future would be and how these companies are determining the worth, right? Because like Spikeball and Premier Spike, I think, are very clear sponsors of this space, like very clear. There's market share of like who's buying Premier Spike, who's buying this, where is their buy-in, et cetera. Other companies that may come in, it's a little bit different. And it is more probably on direct return as far as like sales. Like it's a water bottle company. Hey, did we convert an extra 20 grand via RoundNet players? If not, okay, maybe the awareness like isn't worth it. So I think there's like, as far as Premier Spike and Spikeball, I think both are going to be there, but I think it really determines and is in their long-term strategy of like, what are we trying to get out of that? How do we measure that? Are we getting it? For other companies, I think it's more direct return. And I don't know if that really happens, because RoundNet players aren't the most spendy of people. So there you go. That's my brain dump. Please respond.
No, I need to go. Thank you so much. Do for the rest of your birthday. What?
Yeah, I'm gonna leave it to the other Thomas.
He's here.
Thank you, guys.
Okay, see you. See you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Hi, Thomas. All right, Scott.
Hey, that guy.
Me and you.
So happy he left.
Oh, thank God.
He's the worst. Can't believe you suggested to bring him on. Where's Gavin? So back to the topic. I think you put it perfectly. I think, again, what a RoundNet manufacturer is looking to do, I think the space for them to sponsor athletes is definitely the space that I see RoundNet manufacturers taking in the future. And I think that's the space they should take alongside, you know, selling sets. And in my opinion, that this year they have, you know, both chosen to sponsor athletes, and I think that will work and that will continue to work in the coming years. Some of them might do it for different incentives. Some of them might be doing it, as you said, direct sales. Others might be doing it to gain reputation or credibility within the RoundNet community, you know?
Yep.
And another RoundNet sponsor who, you know, doesn't have many, doesn't sell that many sets or doesn't have that many followers, maybe they're just looking for the exposure from, you know, certain people in the RoundNet community that you also use their net. Like,
yep, they want to be the number three player, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So again, different incentives, as long as they're getting a return on that investment, as you mentioned. I only mention this because, of course, we are not, I mean, RoundNet athletes are not going to survive or be able to commit full time to a sport if, you know, just depending on a manufacturer's money. You know, there's got to be other cash flows. And I know we've
there needs to be the return on investment, ideally externally, right? So like we talk about outside cash, mm-hmm. right? And like greater community might be outside cash. Let's say like RoundNet competitors is 2,500 people. Let's say Premier Spike and Spikeball, they get their value from the 15,000 RoundNet adjacent people outside. So the money comes in to the top, let's say top 50 people like in the community, whatever that is, to 50 people in the community, and the core people aren't buying in, but the external is,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, I think the trouble could be, it's like, if we're just, as they say, robbing Peter to pay Paul, like, ideally, it can come from a different space than inside the community, so it kind of can be a little bit cyclical,
mm-hmm.
Is like, you know, is the basic thing is, like, ideally, you don't want Premier Spike can grow and take from and could take from Spike Blood market share. It's really big, right? It's a big market share. But ideally, they both are growing and gaining even more market share as a total, right? Like the round net market is bigger. Like that would be ideal, right? Is they work together. Like it all comes together for round net itself to grow. Not just Premier Spike takes from Spike Ball, but round net is the same, right? I think that's a big thing. Right.
That's huge, and I think it's so good you say that again. Like, this is why, like, I enjoy having these conversations, and why, again, like, I don't like being tied up to either Spikeball or Premier Spike, because neither of them are perfect, but no one is perfect. But, you know, it gives us the freedom to discuss these things, and especially, like, we can be open and say that Premier Spike, like, they've done so many good things since coming on and coming into the market, but it's quite blatant to see that in a few topics and a few times we've seen them, like, directly bash Spikeball, and it'd be like you versus us, and it'd be like you either choose Premier Spike or you choose Spikeball, and I don't think that's the view and the way they should look at it. Like, they're again taking from Spikeball's market, which is understandable, but they can't just continually take from Spikeball's market and say, oh, screw Spikeball and yes, Premier Spike, because all of their audience comes from Spikeball. So Spikeball stagnate and or decline, Premier Spike, okay, they might be able to take a tiny more percentage of their market. Let's say, you know, 4%, 5% of their market. If Spikeball decline, if they continue to have 4%, 5% of Spikeball's market, they're also declining. Like, the sport of round it needs to come first. And I think that's, in my opinion, where Premier Spike got it slightly wrong, where they need to just grow round it. If they see on its Premier Spike, on a Spikeball net or a Premier Spike net, like, it doesn't matter. Like, hey, we just offer a different type of equipment. The equipment is slightly better, and therefore if you want to use it because you want to play more competitively, it's probably better you play on a Premier Spike net. But their market comes from Spike.
Well, I think like Premier Spike gaining some of that top level market share from Spike Ball, right? Even if it doesn't expand round net at the base of the start, could be good, right? So Premier Spike's like, hey, this is a better version of the pro set. Mm-hmm. And that forces Spike Ball to, you know, innovate, et cetera, and compete in different ways,
yes.
Right? Like, something
all,
else we have
give
here.
Up, all give up on that market and,
yeah,
and
right.
settle for saying, hey, we're going to have the, you know, I mean, Spikeball's sets, you know, again, they sell majority of their money comes in for standard sets, not pro sets. We live in this
yeah,
world
right,
where
right.
we're all taking it seriously, and this yeah. is the scene, this is the podcast about the round, and obviously most, you know, Billy and Bob don't give a crap about, you know,
yeah.
these numbers and the pro set of the competitive scene, they're just out and they bought their set. And that's like 90% of Spikeball sales is the standard
yeah.
set. So
yeah.
we also have to remember that too.
So something else that we kind of have our list right here is like manufacturing, like sponsoring or running tour series. And I know you have thoughts, but I kind of say like mine real quick is
yeah.
that like, right, I think like having one tour series isn't inherently bad. But let's say, for example, there's a Spikeball tour series and there's like a Premier Spike tour series, right? Like one could be higher than the other. Like the Spikeball tour series could still be like the biggest one, but that doesn't mean there isn't value in having a Premier Spike based tour series, right? Like I know like maybe that's not the ideal space, but if that happened, I don't think that's inherently bad, because Premier Spike could do some things like, hey, we do this tournament format. And if it's better, like, I think similar to how I'm saying, like, Premier Spike puts out a product and it could force Spikeball to innovate on that product. Premier Spike or other places that want to run their own tour series could put pressure on Spikeball on the other to do a better tour series. Is that the ideal state? Maybe not. But I think the hard thing, Scott, is that two companies that both want their product features, I think it may be challenging to have some sort of agreement to have them both in a general tour series. You know what I mean? But
yeah. I personally just think they shouldn't be running tour series. Like, I understand Spiteball's positions. Again, the Spiteball tour series had to exist. Spiteball, you know, the leading, the monopoly of the RoundNet world. And they've had to create this tour series to help also competitive RoundNet to grow and to get it where it is now. And that's understandable. And everyone appreciates that. I just think as we go more and more in the years develop, we don't need this manufacturer having such control with inside the RoundNet community where they're dictating, you know, somewhat rules, observers at the Spiteball Tour Series. They're dictating the qualification process sort of worldwide because if people want to compete in the championship, you know. Mm-hmm. It's really clear that the Spiteball Tour Series, and they claim this several times, they don't make a lot of money from the Tour Series. So there's not a need for them to now host this Tour Series. I don't believe they should be doing it. It definitely should be taking over by USA RoundNet. Like, the USA RoundNet should be taking the position that Euro has done in Europe, where each NGB, each country can have its own tour series, you know, RoundNet Austria, British RoundNet, RoundNet Poland. And then on top of that, you then have the European tour series, which you have, you know, 5, 6, 7 events in a calendar year. And then you have your championship of your tour series. And the same thing could be done in the US, Canada, Mexico, if they wanted to include it. But of course, Canada and the US, and just have, you know, a tour
series. Would Spiteball and Premier Spike then be like...
They would then just be sponsored.
Competing, but are they competing for title sponsor and exclusive use of nets?
Yes, they would be. And I think that would also be beneficial for the sport, because then they would just sponsor. Then again, we're then objectively saying, okay, what equipment is best for the sport?
And that might not be, right? USA RoundNet might say, Spiteball is going to give us $50,000 to use their nets. Premier Spike can only afford 20, so we're going to use Spiteball.
And then that's the decision that those who are in that board need to decide. And this is where the big difference comes in. The incentive of that board, such as USA RoundNet, the incentive of that board is to grow the sport of RoundNet. It's not to how much money can we get. Of course, the more money, the better tour series they could potentially produce. But they are also in positions of power, and they understand that they also, you know, need to have the greater, bigger picture in mind and say, look, you know, you mentioned earlier when you said about Spiteball Tour Series hosting the biggest event, let's say, or biggest tour series. Everyone has a tour series, and Spiteball Tour Series is the biggest. But then if you think about it, how crazy is it that the biggest, quote, is played on a Spiteball set, when the Spiteball set isn't even the best equipment for the top level round net? So you're having a top level tour series played on not the top level equipment. Now, again, like, I honestly think...
That's just the reality of Spiteball being the largest manufacturer, and therefore is there's the most money and the prestige in this.
If that continues to go on, it will forever be that way. And then we're never going to get other manufacturers who are growing, and therefore it stagnates the growth of the sport. So I just really hope that the USA RoundNet and Canada RoundNet take more of an incentive, and we don't just consistently leave it to Spiteball. Because again, they've done so many good things, and of course the tour series have been huge in growing the RoundNet scene, especially the competitive RoundNet scene. But what is their incentive at the end of the day? They're a RoundNet manufacturer looking to make money. Like, if they'd lose money, they're out of business. They make loads of money now that maybe they invest a little bit more in the competitive scene. But, you know, they also get more retained earnings and decide what they want to do with that profit. But boards such as USA RoundNet, Canada RoundNet, Euro, RoundNet Austria, like, they're all set up for the incentive of growing the sport of RoundNet. That's two very different incentives. And I think once we get more control and more power to those boards and those committees who have that incentive, we're going to see RoundNet take another step forward. And that needs to come at some point, maybe not next season, but I hope it does, but it might not. But it definitely needs to be on the agenda, both for Spiteball, because it would probably benefit them not having to hire loads of employees to run a Spiteball tour series and just focus on sponsoring the event. And, you know, they say they don't make a huge money from the tour series. So they don't need to now worry about all the logistics and making a small profit. They just let the USA RoundNet then become bigger, which in return helps Spiteball grow as a company because it will get more exposure for the sport. Like, I do believe that's the way to go. And I do hope that it happens sooner rather than later. But I don't know if we're in the position yet for that to happen.
All right, let's move on from here.
Yes.
Keep going. Let's do... just want to do one more of these topics.
Yeah, let's do one more. And it all ties in nicely to the last one.
Which one do you feel? You pick the direction.
I'm going to pick the direction, and I'm going to say the name Ryan Marino. And I'm going to say, I hope you saw his post this week. And I was like, damn, what a post. Like, thank you for sharing, Ryan. Like, that's what I want to, like, I want to see in regards to, oh, you're upset or you're like, you're saying, but I just want to see like your thoughts, your comments,
So for people that aren't familiar, he shared his mom's apple pie recipe for Thanksgiving
out here.
He sent us a nice heartfelt reflection on the championship, awesome.
Mm-hmm. After the, of course, the disappointment of losing in the round of 16 to Kingdom Come, of course, went on to eventually win. Ryan was obviously understandably disappointed at their performance at the championship. And the whole point I want to get to this is that, again, since, 2 years now-ish, we've seen a huge increase in RoundNet accounts from players, casual players, just casually growing in or playing in Asia, to top players in the US or in Europe, like being a place to either just casually document their journey, to either try and document their progress, to either document what's their individual experience on what's happening and share it with the outside world. Whatever their purpose be behind their account, we've seen a huge amount of round accounts over the last 2 years, and that's now dramatically increased the amount of content that RoundNet is being produced. Like, imagine the amount of reels or just RoundNet content out on social media now compared to 2 years ago, because again, there's an influx of social media accounts worldwide that are dedicated to RoundNet. And my point is, and why I say Ryan Marino, is because I think so many teams and so many players haven't done an amazing job posting and sharing their experiences, whether that be wins or losses or just other thoughts that they have. And I know that not everyone's going to dedicate a lot of time to social media. Like, I obviously dedicate quite a lot of time to it, and I do that again with the purpose of, I really like to document that everything I do, so when I'm 50 I can look back and see it all, and you know, I can look back for myself. And if people like that, then that's awesome. If they don't, then they won't follow. But if people want to get more sponsorships outside of just Spikeball or Premier Spike, and they also want to grow their fan base, which is also an important part of RoundNet and sports, then people need to start posting a little bit more often, whether, again, wins, losses, reflections. Like, I haven't heard anything from, you know, in-system after the championship. You know, it would have been nice to hear, like, from some mixed teams, you know, even Spotless. Like, some teams don't even post their wins after they win a big event, so I just want to hear it. I'm a fan.
I'd love more.
I'm a fan of so many teams. Like, I love Blake. I love Etienne. I love them as people, and I want to hear from them more often because I'm a fan. So
I get it, right? I'm not a social media guy. I think I have an issue where I get a little too in it and then out of it. So I'm not a big social media guy. But like, it's enjoyable. Or not enjoyable, but like, it's good insight. One, it's like good, like, honestly, like, for branding, like, I think it's great to, like, follow up, show what you do, et cetera. But then also, it's, like, really nice personally to, like, see those reflections and see those things and keep up. I know it's not easy, and I know it, like, takes some practice, but I think also, like, it's also a thing that, like, you can really gain momentum with, right? Like, when you keep posting and you have good interactions, you want to keep doing it. I think so. Like, we're in this good spot, Scott, where like a lot of people have the accounts, and I think that's huge for RoundNet. But, and some people are putting out great content, like Connor Prelick, mm-hmm. putting out some great videos.
And he changed his purpose, you know. He was just documenting his, or he was like,
I know, he's like making fun of Scott for a while, you know.
Yeah, and then he upgraded, but then he decided to just make it like a documentation of all his travels, all his games, and then also help educate people on certain like terms and definitions in RoundNet, you know, soft touch, what a cut serve is, etc. And like, it's awesome because there's a space for it, but there's a space for so much stuff in RoundNet. And people can go whatever direction they want with their personal account, but it's just...
All I was going to say is like, we're in a good spot, but I think there's a place where like you can go further, right? And like, yeah.
Because I think to tie this all back and to end the podcast, I think if we want to see RoundNet grow and we want to see more cash come into to RoundNet as like a cash flow so the sport can grow, and we want to see more people follow the sport, then, you know, as athletes, one thing we can control is the output that we do. The more of an output we can do, whether that just be you want to document yourself, or you want to try and reach a wider audience, or whether you just want to put out, you know, round it content and be put your own creative twist on it, because it's also a source, an outlet for me, like, to get creative, because I like, you know, making reels and content. So whatever that be, it all ties in really nicely with, you know, 2024, we could see like sponsorships come into the sport, because the sport is growing. Yep. There's evidence of that. How quickly it's growing is another question, but it's definitely growing. So,
yep.
And as athletes, we still have a lot of control over that. So I do hope that people are a little bit more incentivized to, if their intention is to, or get more sponsorships potentially in 2024, that they do put out a little bit more. If their team wants to get more of like a fan base, or even more of like, you know, recognition at the tournament, so they do put effort into keeping updated with their thoughts and experiences at events, which is another reason again why Ryan's post was so awesome to see, because it would be cool to see more of that sort of stuff.
Yeah,
in the Roundup community.
So, like, why did Rogue lose?
I actually haven't watched their games. Actually planning on watching some of the championship games back with Thomas in the next, or tomorrow, which I guess is today if you're listening, on a Wednesday. And then seeing what we do with the content. But yeah, it's, I don't know. I've watched a lot of the championship, but not the final stages, because I had soccer game.
Yeah. How are you guys doing this year? Quick Scott personal. How's the team doing?
Team's not doing that well. Still got a good chance of making the playoffs. It's been a very average season so far.
Better than last season?
Better than last season. Last season was pretty poor. But the weather is incredible, man. Weather's incredible. That's about it.
Yeah, it's really cold. It's pretty cold up here. Don't you wish you were up here?
Absolutely not. Oh, that's all.
That's all. Wow.
Mm.
All right. Thomas is going to take it away. I thought about trying to like impersonate him, but that's in poor taste. So I'll say, hey, I'm Thomas. It's my birthday. I'm 28. Younger than Mike, but surprising, right? Like, you would definitely think I was older than Mike. I'm from Austria. I like to stream. Thanks for listening to this episode.
Lovely. What a great outro, Tops. All right. Thank you all for listening. We will see you guys next week. Next week will be the last episode of the series, season two. We will do those Roundup podcast awards. So we will make some nominations, myself, Mike, and Tops, this week. We will then do some polls on the story, and then you guys will decide and vote for your winner within each category.
That's crazy. I hope I win Podcaster of the Year.
You got a strong competition with the guy.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you guys for listening. See you all next week.